I'm buzzing. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, folks. On the way up, my bride was reading some of this to me, and she says you say this every week, so I'll shorten it. It's kind of this is entirely my experience combined with the little knowledge I've picked up from practicing the 12 steps in my life. And I'm not an expert, okay? And I don't want anybody to ever think I am, because I'm not. I'm still learning, and by now I know very little. The steps say very little about alcohol or sobriety. They just mention alcohol once in the beginning of step one, and that's it. And there's a lot of people that stay sober without working the steps. I've known a lot of them. Early on, Bill Wilson said, the steps are designed for living, and I really agree with that. I think they are a fantastic design for living. In the beginning, I said one step kind of leads to another, and I stand by that, and I'm going to briefly go through step one. In step one, I accepted I was powerless, okay, and also that my life was unmanageable. Now, I thought that once I quit drinking and drugging, I could manage my life, and I wasn't sober too long. And I realized my life was still unmanageable, even though I wasn't drinking and drugging. I was doing a better job, just because I wasn't doing really the stupid things I was doing when I was drinking. But I wasn't doing too good. And I realized one time when I was going to go drinking, I went to a meeting first, that in step two, I came to believe that AA was a power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity, because I didn't believe in God at the time. I had a 3-year where I had an idiot for a sponsor, because my sponsor died, and I was my own sponsor for about the next 3 years. When I was 5 years sober, I got another sponsor, and it was time to go into step three, and I balked at it, but we made an agreement that I was making a decision, and I was going to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to something that had control of it besides me. You know, I think if I'd have turned it over to a possum, I'd have got better, because at least I wasn't making my decisions. And we have one that raids our bird feeder, and possums are really stupid too, you know. But anyway, and I still think AA is a divine tool given to us by God. And AA is my first line of defense against myself, my own stupid thinking and stupid decisions. So I made a decision, and we're at step four. And one of the things I had to do, some things first before, I just made a decision to turn my life over. And I did a fourth step with Big Jim, my first sponsor, and it was pretty primitive. It was a list of rotten things I did. It was just a regular grocery list of rotten stuff. And step five was I confessed that to Jim. Now, it was very primitive, and it's not what I see step four and five as today, but it wasn't without value, because I told him some things, and it did kind of relieve me. And also, he didn't flip out when I told him some of the things. There were some things I did that I didn't tell him. But I made this confession, and if you need to make a confession, make a confession to somebody. But I don't like to call that a fourth step anymore. Afterwards, we took that list and we burned it, and it was a ritual. And I really wished I wouldn't have burned it, because I'd like to see it today, because I'd probably be damned, you know. because it was about 38 years ago I did that. After I got done and after the fire went out, I says, I'm glad that's over. I don't want to ever have to go through that again. And Big Jim said, no, it's like an onion. You peel off a layer and there's another layer. And right away, I was probably thinking something like, oh, crap, you know, because I didn't want to go through it again. But, and I said to him, he had 14 years sobriety at the time. And I said, what happens when you get to the middle? And he said, I don't know, I'm still peeling. And I probably thought, oh, crap, again. Yeah. But anyway, that's kind of like an introduction to it. But as I tried to establish last week in step three, I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And I could make that right then, but I couldn't turn it over because I had some things to do first. I couldn't control things, even in my own destiny, so this was a good idea. And it was kind of, it was like I owned a company and I managed it and I ran it right into bankruptcy. And the company was my life and I managed it, but I needed a new manager. So I kept the company, but I hired a new manager. And it was God as I understand him. And at the time, I didn't believe in God. That came later. But anyway, AA and God were going to run my life. That was the decision I made. Now, my dad and I was sober not real long, and he wanted to go to Philadelphia to check something out. And neither one of us had ever been to Philadelphia. And I don't think I had no idea how big Philadelphia was. And we went there, and it was like the Clampets went to Philadelphia. And we're there, and we go in this parking barn that has a cop, and they charged us, this was like probably 81 or 82, they charged us like $8 to park there, you know, and my dad paid it, but I couldn't believe it. And, you know, it was gated and everything. And when we came back, I stuck the key in my truck and it wouldn't start. So we went out and we popped open the hood and we're standing there. And a cop comes up and he says, son, I'm not a mechanic, but I am a cop. Your car won't start because somebody stole your battery. And I'm there, you got a gun. Aren't you supposed to keep people from doing this? And he says, I know somebody that they'll sell you a battery pretty cheap. They won't charge you arm and leg. He lied. They charged us an arm and leg. But and I didn't like that we had to buy a battery to get it in and get the hell out of here. I ain't been back since. I never will, probably. I'll live the whole rest of my life and die and never be in Philadelphia again. But anyway, see, the first step in solving any problem I've ever had or you've ever had or you ever will have is a simple inventory. You know, Joe McHugh goes through the 12 steps, and he has a sponsor's book where you read it so you can teach the 12 steps through Joe McHugh. And the very first assignment that you give your sponsee, that Joe says, is have them identify the problem. And step four is where we identify the problem. Dad, the cop, and I did an inventory on a truck, and I didn't like what I had to do to fix it, but I did it. And it's the same way with step four. When you're going through step four or more step five, and you find out what you've got to change, you're probably going to balk. I know I did. And I didn't like it. And it takes me a while. But we're getting ahead of me here because that's coming in 6 and 7. But the thing is, so I proceeded to do a four-step. I did it different ways. I did it with sponsees a lot. In the early days, I had a sheet that I stole off Al-Anon, and it had assets and qualities and shortcomings, and I would give my sponsee half of it, and his qualities and shortcomings. I'd have him rate them from 1 to 5, and I'd compare the two, and I'd kind of get a list of shortcomings and qualities at the end of it. But today, and I got a sheet. Marilyn, would you pass out the sheets? Maybe just give a bunch of them to somebody in each row. This is like high school or grade school days where nobody sits in the front row.
And
yeah, but the thing is, I always sat in the front row. It wasn't by choice, it was by invitation, you know. And usually I got marched up there by the ear with the teacher, and that's where I sat. So tonight, I didn't feel that out of place when I was sitting there by myself, because I've sat in the front row in probably the first 6 grades anyway. This is a new sponsee I got. I usually don't have this put on, but this is by my new sponsee, Mr. Fred Flintstone. Okay? And I was talking to Jessica, and I said, I did that. I said, I'm doing it on a sponsee, and she, you know. And I said, no, it's Fred Flintstone. And then I got to thinking, there's probably somebody here there's probably a Flintstone Foundation will probably find out about this and sue the hell out of me. I don't know. But anyway, and he's got a resentment towards his long line best drinking buddy, Barney. Yeah, Barney R. And it's like, Wilma hates Barney R because they're drinking buddies, and Fred's blamed everything on Barney for years. So, and I'm doing this kind of like as an example. I'm resentful at people, places. It's a name there. Now, a lot of the big book, Joe McHugh, says list everybody and do one column at a time. I don't do it that way, and I'm sharing my experience, and you're going to see why I don't do it that way later. But I just take one issue at a time. And we got Barney here. And Fred made Barney, his drinking buddy, the sales manager. And then Barney was sales manager for a while, and Fred trusted him. And Barney took off and started his own company, competing with Fred, and took most of the customers. And Fred got a little bit of a resentment towards that. And I can understand, you know. Now, so column one and column two aren't really going to change, you know. And usually when I'm sponsoring somebody or myself, I can understand why they resent. And, you know, we talk about resentments, you shouldn't have them. And a guy I admired, Father Joseph Martin, he was a priest, and he says, if somebody punches you in the nose and you don't get a resentment, you're soft between the ears, you know. And that came from this he was a great guy. I loved him dearly, and I had him on a pedestal. But anyway, and so here, Fred is feeling some kind of way about this. How did it affect his ego? And I put an X. Usually I have people underline everything. Then I go back and have circle the important ones. And I didn't do this here, but I put an X by insecurity and pride. You see that? Okay. I did that because I thought that's what it would affect him, his ego. And then I have feelings. And there again, I just have a list of things kind of to give myself or my sponsee a little better grasp on what to look for. In fact, I made a whole bunch of copies. I made a whole bunch of copies, and please take one or two. And these aren't copyrighted. I stole them from somebody that did a Joe McHugh. And you can see that I got on there 4/12/18. That was the last time I updated it. This is, you can take it, you can update it. If you give me your email, I'll email you some. If you have Word on your computer, you can do your whole fourth step on your computer in the privacy of your own home. And I like doing it on a computer because I can change things. I went to a group one time, and there was a lady teaching it. And I told people in the group that I could send them it by email, and they could do it on a computer. And she said, "No, you got to write it." And I said that to my wife when I got home. She says, "We got to write it." And my wife said, "Yeah." And I found out it was a division. The men like doing it on a computer, and the women liked writing it out by hand. Maybe that's why men should sponsor men and women should sponsor women. I don't know. But anyway, I got a list there. Disrespected. Fred felt disrespected by Barney. He felt rejected. He felt abandoned, attacked, and used. Okay, this is what he was feeling. In column four, and I do this in the third column because I think that's about as important as character defects. And what I do is I like to look for things that keep repeating. And I'll share on my personal one that what usually comes up is my self-esteem and ambitions, okay? Feeling disrespected comes up on a lot of my four steps. And most of my resentments, I'm feeling disrespected, and it's bugging my self-esteem, and I'm pissed, you know. So anyway, and you'll probably find when you start doing these, the same thing comes up. We'll talk about that later. It's probably coming up since you were before you were 5 years old. It's called a core issue or a family of origin. Now, what did I do? Now here, Fred put this down. Failed to set boundaries. Trusted too easily. Failed to supervise Barney. I got their S, but I'm... What happened was I made a mistake. I didn't delete it. The S stands for sponsor because next week we're going to talk about step five with a sponsor. And so just disregard that for now. I'll explain it next week. But Fred failed to set boundaries. Step four, column four, in this fourth step chart, that's what you can change. That's what you can change when you get to step six, okay? But right now, we're still just doing an inventory. Failed to set boundaries, trusted too easily, and he failed to supervise. All those things are tangible that you can change, you know? You cannot do that. If you're a supervisor, you can supervise better. We'll talk about that again. Now, we're going to look at character defects. This is column five. Now, I put a list of character defects up here. It's because the ones that I see coming up most often. Actually, I got it. I think I got it off the internet. I don't know where I got it. Maybe I stole it from somebody. I got a list of 194 character defects. And you don't want to look at it because you'll have 194 of them. And I tell people, see, that's a racial thing. And they go, racial? Yeah, if you're part of the human race, you got character defects. Now, there's this old timer, and he's old, and he's been sober a long time, and he's kind of gruff, but I really admire what he said one time. He says, "I don't have character defects, I have character traits. They become defects when they start to injure me or others." And, you know, we've all done things wrong. It's part of human nature. I used to have trouble with that when I was a kid. The preacher says, "We're all sinners," and I'm there, "You're preaching. Why are you sinning? You know, you shouldn't be doing that." I didn't think anyway, but anyway, and it's because that's a racial thing. Preachers are part of the human race. We all are. These character defects, this list, I have them go through that, and they can add more. When you want to take this, and if you want to change it, feel welcome to. You can take off stuff, add to it. That's why I use a computer too, because I'm forever changing this. Fred came up with, he was self-seeking, impatient, submissive, and that's all he could come up with on his own. He just did a fourth step. Now, the thing is with the fourth step is you're looking for what you got to change, basically, to get closer to God, to turn your will and your life over to the care of God. This is the first thing. This is just a list of things I had to do. And I did this. This is kind of simple and primitive, but hopefully you get the idea. The fourth step is not as complicated this way, and it's not as intimidating. I used to, I've done written four steps where I wrote down a lot of stuff, and I've done a fifth step where they read it over. In fact, one guy actually was a retreat master at a spiritual retreat. He says, "You're kind of hard on yourself," and I didn't get much out of it. So what I like to do is I like things tangible on paper where I can look at it and write it down. Now, I keep these. And I have a three-ring binder that's getting fuller and fuller. Because what Jim said is you keep doing it. You just keep peeling your onion. I sponsor a lot of guys, and when they go through their fourth step, I go through a fourth step of my own. And I mean, this one right here I fabricated for obvious reasons. I think any one of my sponsees, if I took one of their four steps and presented it publicly, they'd be pretty pissed. You know? So, but, you know, I've been doing this for years, and I do one of my own. A lot of times I do one like one that they're doing. And, you know, I do a fifth step with them before they do a fifth step with me. And I do that to kind of encourage them, show them the way, and kind of gain their trust. And, you know, I trust them enough to do a fourth and fifth step with them, and they in turn trust me. And it seems to work, okay, that way. And, you know, actually, I thought a lot about this over the week, and this week and next week. I'm going to talk to you as a sponsee, but I'm also talking to you as a sponsor, because I think every sponsee needs to become a sponsor at some point. I think you pass it on. So I guess what I'm suggesting, and maybe I'm kind of preaching and teaching, but learn this, go through it, and then share it. And what happened with me is I got more information. I keep these because there was a saying I think I talked about last week, more will be revealed. And there always is more revealed. And when more is revealed and I have this on a computer, I can go right to the computer and change it. And I do that a lot. I do that a lot. Because the thing is, the fourth step, look at it as a mirror. Where you're looking in the mirror and you see yourself. Well, actually, you're looking into the mirror of your character and you're starting to see yourself. Last week I ran over, and I see this week I'm shy. I'm supposed to talk for 30 minutes, and it's okay. Well, hang on a minute. I want to...
I ran over. Come here.
I couldn't remember Jill's name, and I apologize. For some reason, I called her Laura. I did that last week too, didn't I?
Yeah.
I told Jack, I said the first thing that goes is your memory, and I can't remember what the second thing is, you know. But anyway, that's pretty much what I have for the fourth step. I was worried about talking too long, but it's kind of complicated, but it's not. Now I'll answer questions. So there you go, Jill.
All right. That was the question and answer part. Anybody got any questions?
Oh.
Okay. I would like to have you explain column three a little more, because column three.
Okay.
Where you have ego up there, and I guess what I'm wondering about or wanting more clarification on is the basic instincts that when we're doing the fourth step, it tends to be the negative side of the basic instincts.
Sure.
But I wondered if you could clarify the positive side,
okay,
as well as the...
I guess I should explain. Ego, and then I know you probably all know what it is. It's your sense of self. I quoted Freud, and he said, ego is the sense of self, and I'm paraphrasing it because I can't quote it offhand up here, but a sense of self, and I've got affects my, and I got self-esteem, insecurity, ambitions, personal relations, sex relations, and pride. Those are all parts of self. Of it's part of myself, but it's also part of you. The feelings are different because I think the feelings are caused by the ego. I got disrespected, rejected, vulnerable, defeated, shamed, guilty, used, judged, afraid, overwhelmed, abandoned, unworthy. And what Marilyn said is an inventory, if you're doing a store inventory, you're taking inventory of what you need, but you're also taking inventory of what you have. And one of the things that I try to do as a sponsor, as my sponsor, Big Jim, when I went through that laundry list, all the crappy things I did at the end, and I was less than a year sober when I did that, I couldn't think of anything good about myself. And he says, there's a lot of good things about you. And I said, such as? He says, you got a nice smile, your nose doesn't look that bad from being broken. And I had a broken nose when I first came. And there was something else. I don't know. There was something about, he started telling me nice things about me, and I think that's important. Probably more as a sponsor, you want to, and that's one of my shortcomings as a sponsor, because when I'm doing a fourth and fifth step with somebody, I'm looking for what's wrong and what needs to be changed, and I have to take a step back, and I can say something good about everybody in this room. I could probably say something bad about everybody in this room if I looked for it, but I don't look for it. But when you're my sponsee, I kind of look for what needs to be changed, and you can see that as negative. But as a sponsor, it's kind of, you got to tiptoe on that line, because one of the parts of the ego right up top is self-esteem. And a lot of people, especially children of alcoholic parents, they get destroyed a lot. And we all as alcoholics feel a lot of guilt and shame, because I don't know about you guys, but I did some things that I should have felt guilty and ashamed of. You know, I did some shitty things. I regretted that. So I needed when Big Jim put his arm around me and told me that I wasn't all bad, because I couldn't, boy, especially early on, I couldn't see anything good about it, anything I did. I had a lot of self-hatred, I guess. And I think that's pretty common, because I've sponsored a lot of guys. You know, my dad, he was like my counselor before I ever came to AA. And I used to go down, he would work third shift, or he worked a funny shift. He worked for 43 years from 6 o'clock at night till 2:30 in the morning. He'd get home. And I'd go down at 2:30 in the morning, and he'd be smoking a cigarette, drinking coffee, and eating a piece of toast before he went to bed. And I'd tell him my troubles. And one of the things he'd usually start out, well, it's probably not as bad as you think. And I do that a lot when somebody starts reading their fourth step, and, well, it's probably not as bad as you think. And we had a guy at the spring conference, and he said, I've listened to a lot of fifth steps. He said, unless you did something sexual with a chicken in a spaceship with a laser, then you haven't done anything somebody else hasn't done. And right away I'm thinking, what in heck could you do sexual with a chicken and a laser in a spaceship? And I said that to somebody else, and they said, yeah, I was thinking the same thing. And I think everybody was. I don't know. Okay. Did that kind of answer your question? Did it? The shrug in your shoulders, was that the chicken and spaceship? You don't need to know. I don't know. Disregard that last. Other questions? Surely there's some questions. Yes, Marion.
Hey Buzz, good job. Marion, alcoholic.
Thank you, Marion.
I don't ever have a problem tackling the resentments, but you didn't talk about fears and the sex parts of, you know, the fourth step, and I think, you know, the resentments for me are always easy to tackle. Fears,
okay.
Yeah. And then when I get into the sex part, I'm hoping that...
Harms?
I'm hoping my sponsees don't want to talk about it, because neither do I. So how do you tackle that? How do you...
The same way. The harms done to others is the same way. It affects your ego, and it affects the character defects come out. And harms with others and fears. You know, one of the things that I've seen, and I think it's kind of a macho man thing, where you say, what are you afraid of? And when you say that, they say, I ain't afraid of nothing. And one of the things, it says in the big book 100 different kinds of fears. It could probably say 1,000 or 1,000,000, because we, you know, fears, that's why we do a whole lot of what we do, and that is huge. And probably, you know, the resentments address anger, but the first half of my life, or almost half of my life, I had two emotions, fear and anger. And I really hate to be afraid or angry. And this kind of set me free. I actually don't have an anger thing, but they're all pretty much the same. You know, you have what you fear. My bride, she's got moves, you know, I'm afraid of her. And then I go in, and my ego, usually when actually it's my self-esteem and my pride that I'm afraid of. I'm really afraid of what you folks think of me, you know. I guess if I was going to look at the feelings that I'm feeling up here, is I'm feeling vulnerable, unworthy, maybe judged. And see, that's how. And I'm feeling vulnerable, judged, and unworthy. I said that in the beginning, that I felt very unqualified to be up here talking about the steps. And that's a fear of mine. And really, if I think about it intellectually, it is what it is. I'm up here. I'm going to try to do my best. But anyway, does that kind of, the fears, the harms to others is usually my ego is, pride, and I feel a lot of guilt and shame. And there is a difference between guilt and shame. Guilt is when you feel bad because of something you did. You stole something. You punched somebody in the nose. You wrecked their car. You hit somebody when you're drunk. And you feel terrible about it. That's guilt. Shame is when you feel bad about who you are. And there's a lot of that before you come in. Because when you first realize you're an alcoholic. I remember the first time I said publicly, I'm Buzz and I'm an alcoholic. And it was like trying to swallow a big dry horse turd, you know. It was like I was so ashamed. Sexual harms, it's pretty much the same thing. One thing that I think you'll find out on all four of these is you're going to see, you ever heard of SSDD? Same shit, different day. A lot of times, you're going to, and we're going to talk about this more next week. I don't want to get into next week's too much because I really try to keep it around 30 minutes and then questions. And last week I went over and this week I went short. So it evens out. I mean, we're good, you know. I have to defend myself a little bit anyway. But does that kind of answer your question? And it does. It takes a lot of soul searching, but it's supposed to. That's the idea. And step four and step five is a humbling experience. And I feel bad whenever I do a thorough fourth step or fifth step. You know, it says fearless. And take some courage to take a look at yourself and realize what's wrong. I answered your question. Who else? Anybody? Then we got one here.
Well, we always got one over here.
I love Kevin. He's great. He bails me out. Every week he's got a question.
That's exactly. Buzz, thanks again for coming out. This is what you're doing is really hard. And I really appreciate the effort that you put into it. One of the things that my question is when you're working with somebody and you know you talk about resentments and they go, well, let's see, you know, I really don't resent anybody. You say, well, what about your dad? Well, I hated him. What about your mom? Then the next thing you know, the resentments are humanity. And it's, but when you get down to or like fears, you know, and we're both men, so usually I'm not afraid of anything. And they say, well, I'm blocked on these fears things, and how do you break that barrier of fears? And then with when they go about sex, well, it was never my fault, or how do you coach people into taking a look at themselves internally where they have to look at themselves sexually and fearfully?
I think in 1934 when Bill went to see Bob, Bob says, I'll give Bill, this guy, 15 minutes. And he called him Williams twice in the first couple of minutes. And Bill set him straight. But he says, and Dr. Bob was hungover. You probably all know the story. But I think the very thing that started AA, it worked then, and it worked, is Dr. Bob says, what are you going to do for me? And Bill says, I didn't come here for you to help you get sober. I came here hoping you'd help me get sober. And Bill started telling his story, and that 15 minutes stretched into 6 hours. Probably would have been longer, but they ran out of cigarettes. And it started what's going on here tonight. And I think you're going to get that. The newer the guy, and I say guy because I only sponsor guys, but for you ladies, the newer the person, really, I should say, I guess. But the thing is, the more resistance you're going to get and the more self-conscious they're going to be. Because, let's face it, when we're drinking, and then if there's something illegal involved, like drugs and other things that go along with it, and selling drugs and different things that are just kind of, they might be outside issues in here, but they really go along with the addiction. And you have them very closed, and how you open them up is you tell them about yours. And the sexual harms, I thought, oh God. And really, I only did one sexual harm, but I did it over and over. So, and when I tell that, probably most guys have done the same sexual harms. And basically, talking you ladies into doing something that you really knew you weren't supposed to be doing, you know. We've all done it, and once you start talking about it, then they open up. And the sexual harms is probably real tough, especially when you have some deviation. You know, I know guys that have been molested, it's very taboo, and sometimes as a sponsor, you know it's there, but you don't want to pull it out. You want to make it a comfortable atmosphere so they can come out. There's a lot of, you know, I mean, I really believe things like rape is devastating to anybody, whether you're a man or a woman. And, you know, I think society's getting healthier because people are coming out with it more and talking about it, but which is, I think, a healthy thing to do. But for years and years, you told nobody, you let it sit in your guts and rot. And the same way with harms, the people that I harmed the most, this still makes me very ashamed. The people I harmed the most were people that loved me the most. It was very expensive to love me. And even today, I apologized to Marilyn the other day because I was upset. But it wasn't her, but I was getting snappy and impatient. And those are two of my character defects, and they're coming out. And I'm afraid of her, so I made amends before she got to baseball. I taught her how to shoot, too, you know. Okay, we're about out of time, but I'll take the time to answer anything. Okay, thank you. I was going to say to